Welcome to Job Tales, the show where we find out about different professions from around the world. Each week, I speak to a new guest with a very interesting job. I'm Laura Leoncini, and today my guest is Inka Kenzia. She considers herself privileged coming from a family of artists. Over the years, she has explored various art expressions, and today she mixes visuals live, aka VJ, and creates immersive projection art for musicians and artists, using computer technology as her canvas. Today we explore her impressive curriculum and insightful advice for artists to become. Hi, Inka. So nice to have you on my podcast. I am interested in hearing your story because a lot of people want to be artists, but being an artist is not necessarily easy, and then especially earn your living from being an artist. So how did you find your artistry, and what do you do today?
Oh, wow. It is a vast question. And thank you so much for inviting me into this. I am so grateful to be sharing the many things I've been doing across my career path and always having been driven by art, I guess, which is my wish to communicate with others on a deep level to remind ourselves that we're all human and we're all connected. So my family, I was very lucky in the sense that I was born into an artistic family, because I think again, when you're very young and people just allow you to play and be artistic, I think we are all artists, basically. Every single human has these beautiful creative abilities. But I think so often we are told, you know, I hear people say that quite a lot. Oh, I'm not creative, or I'm not an artist, or I can't paint, or any of those things. And I think we take on restrictions so quickly. But I was very lucky that I was, my great-grandfather was an artist. My grandfather, my mom, my family, just everyone really supported me as a kid already, just drawing and painting and, you know, doing all of that. And I thought I'd pursue a career in fine art. But, you know, studying and funding was definitely a thing that wasn't completely easy. And the same thing, I guess, again, that we get told often is, you know, you have to earn a living. So being an artist is a luxury in a way, you know, especially I was born in Namibia and especially in South Africa within that context. So I was considering graphic design because, yes, that is still art to a degree, but within a professional commercial context, and was able to just do a little bit of practical work and immediately actually then jumped into just falling in love with computers, literally. But this is, in the 90s in a way, where I just,
right,
Adobe and all the software, and just going, this is amazing. I can transfer my painting and do something in a digital way, way back.
Right. When we were still doing HTML.
Exactly. The internet was not yet invented. Or yes, it was, but extremely just
was
limited.
Just at the beginning. Yes. I remember looking at my university webpage for the first time. I found it was just a flabbergasting.
Yeah,
you click enter and here comes a bunch of images and text. I say, where does that come from?
Yeah, absolutely. And how slowly text loaded on, you know, your beautiful like 56K modem or whatever it was. wild. But yeah, so I just I got into art directing basically, and yeah, graphic design, and from that then was doing book layout for a while. And then when I was working in Germany, I really had the strong feeling of wishing to be able to be in Cape Town and work here. And there was an assistant editor job that I applied for, a film editor, because I also really wanted to move out of static images. So everything I did in a way is very much learning on the job. I'm self-taught when that comes to software, but also just different avenues, like then film directing, which was also really linked to, I used to be a drummer in a band. So the company I got the job with really enjoyed that part of my CV when I was applying, the fact that, you know, there's rhythm to something that one does with visuals when you really find the story within filmed footage. And around 2000, I was invited into creating a VHS, basically, that was an assemblage of footage for the launch of African Dope Records' very first CD in 2000. And this is really the beginning of bedroom producers. This is the beginning of software becoming available to anyone and everyone. So really the democratization of access in a way, because, you know, before that it was vinyl, which is obviously the best still, absolutely, but just a kind, especially in South Africa, you know, you not really readily have access to tools and are able to express music yourself with major labels, basically, usually doing all of that. So independent music, in a way, together with what I was doing then as live visuals, basically. So being invited into the space to create VHS tape, and together with Peter Robson, this amazing VJ that still was playing with oil lamps and all kinds of slide projectors and all things. He's come from that tradition, but then obviously also digital, really inviting me into the space to go create your tape. We'll just press play on both tapes and I'll teach you how to VJ in this one night live among the audience. And I just completely fell in love with that. That was just mind blowing. It was just being able to do everything that I did. And in the day, in terms of film editing, that was a lot more planned and cerebral and frame-based, and you're very meticulous. And obviously in its own, you know, needs to be that meticulous. And I absolutely loved it. But now I could just do this live and respond to the music, respond to what was happening in the room, and completely change what I was expressing based on, you know, effects that I would bring in live. Even though I had prepared something, you can just really flow with what is happening in the moment when VJing.
So VJ is visual jockey.
Yes, visual jockey.
And so give me an example of a visual jockey you've made.
That I've made?
Like, you call yourself a VJ?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, tell me some of the work you've done as a VJ.
So as a VJ back then, again, was very, I guess, analog. So we were playing with vision mixers and VHS. And then later that became, we had DVDs, or we could play with mini DV tapes, and actually, again, also able to create our own footage versus relying on what was out there. And also, yeah, I mean, now I guess you can download so much. You have access to image banks and all kinds of things online, whereas 20 years ago, that really just, there was nothing. You kind of really had to create something, whether that was with stop motion or not. So then when I VJed back then was for the bands that were part of African Dope Records, like Moonface 5 or Kalahari Surfers, who does incredible sample-based music and is still very active today. And then that kind of transformed into, you know, it becoming more digital, playing off computers now, the screens. Back then we were working with projections, then the LED screens came out, and the scale of everything that we were doing or are doing now is just gigantic. I mean, now I've been playing for Black Coffee, who is just a fantastic music producer and obviously, you know, known worldwide. When he did two of his events called Music is King in Johannesburg, I directed all the content for the screens, really designed it for how the screens were designed and how the experience was played out, and then also played live on during the event, which is, you know, quite a long event. So I often play, I don't know, it can be anything from, you know, 4 to 12 hours or something. Something like Bushfire Festival in Eswatini, for example, I play across those 3 days for the various musicians that come across and their stages. And that's a really beautiful experience. So in that instance, it's completely live. I don't know what people will be doing. I really have to feel out what the mood is. You know, is it a ballad? Is it up tempo? Is it, what kind of aesthetic has it? Because I guess every musical style in a way has a visual aesthetic that we do associate with it, or that we, I think, naturally are drawn to, I guess, you know. So I've played on Black Coffee's event, for example, I played for Tom Misch. I've played corporate events for Seal, for John Legend at Bushfire Festival. I've played for eBay.
Fantastic.
Yeah, just,
and you, yeah, you made a name for yourself. Was it difficult at the beginning, or how did you start?
I think I was very lucky because I was drawn into the community by people that were very sharing and that were very open. And I think that's the most important thing in whatever we do, is that you really see each other as part of a community, and you know, each one teach one, and you all bring each other up together. I think it can be quite a competitive field, whatever you do. You know, I do motion design and animation, and being a woman is, you know, or film directing, I mean, or now in VJing or just playing live, it's a very, very technical job to some aspect. It's very creative, but there's a massive technical amount to it. And we often have these strange things that we think or say, you know, that women are not really suited for that. And I think it's really just because we're not often seen in those spaces. And I guess because we feel maybe subconsciously or consciously or very real, you know, you get mansplained a lot, that those spaces are not inviting. But I was extremely lucky that Peter Robson back then was absolutely inviting, really, you know, wishing to be, have someone that sees the same thing that he loves in live visuals, you know, come on board. And we had a really a small community of like-minded. Anwar McWhite was part of it, and Jeremy Collins, and we just all, you know, inspired each other, shared what we were doing, because we were working in various tools like After Effects, or, you know, various approaches of how we created our own visuals back then. And then I think that just brought that forward. You know, now I really, I wish more people would come up and say, hey, I really want to do this and learn. But I often also go, you know, here, here's the link. This is the software. Go teach. You know, I taught myself, so I know that that way to learn. So there's so many tutorials online now. There's so much that's available in comparison to before. So,
It's true that it's it might not be a straightforward option to look for, because it's not within that academic
syllabus,
you know, routine and the syllabus that you're used to. You know, like, I want to do mathematics, I go to university. I want to become a lawyer, I go to university.
Absolutely. You know,
or trades, like I want to be a hairdresser, then I have a school specific for that. When it gets more to, you need to do it yourself and become, you know, like tutorials, and that means a lot of motivation from inside and self-confidence that you're going to make it. And when you talk about being an artist, oftentimes in families as well, it's like, oh, well, you want to be an artist, but find yourself first a real job, and then you can be an artist on the side. That's usually what be, at least in my generation as well, you know, like, you're not going to make any money with artists, you know, becoming a... So are you actually, that's my question, are you making enough money today that you can say, hey, I can be a full-time artist?
Yes, I mean, because I think everything I do, even though some of it might be more commercial and let's say for a brand or a massive festival or something, I still feel that that is me being within my artistic expression and living my art. Yeah. And I think so much of what we do, I think if we just throw yourself at something with absolute passion, I think you'll find your way, because I think everything that we do in life is in a reflective way, looking back at something, you can feel the path, or you can see how the path unfolded. And obviously you must, you know, I guess, be heading in a direction or be drawn to something, otherwise you become quite scattered. But I think I am very, very grateful that I definitely can support myself from my art, whether that is, you know, making music videos, because I'm linked to artists that are doing something in a live space, or performing live visuals, or then also what I've really loved exploring lately, or I mean, I guess always, but it's as technology becomes again more accessible and also better in terms of projection technology, in terms of the brightness of things, I'm now really able to explore projection art and immersive spaces as part of my artistry as well. And it's interesting because obviously 20 years ago, you know, that was all that we had access to. LED screens didn't exist 25 years ago. And we would be rigging our projectors that were massive, like really these giant beasts of projectors, rigging them ourselves, running cables in the ceiling, you know, literally doing absolutely everything for a small, you know, music event, because we were, especially, I guess, with African Dope Records and all, extremely DIY, extremely hands-on, just everyone getting involved in building a community or a collective space for people to just enjoy music and visuals.
I see in your bio, which is impressive, by the way, that you worked with on Ron Howard's documentary of the Beatles, Eight Days a Week. What is a motion design? Can you explain to me about being a motion designer?
Yeah, so motion design is very much almost like design, you know, in movement, in motion. So it linked really well from when I was a art director and graphic designer. Once I was then going across into film editing, I discovered, you know, previously I was working on Adobe Photoshop, and then I discovered Adobe After Effects, which was also, you know, I don't know, version 3 or something like that. And from that just went, oh, this is like Photoshop, but now I make my type move, you know, and my text move. So I think the principles of what makes design, same as what makes an art piece work in terms of what balances an image, or where is your counterpoint, or where is the tension with an image in an image when you're painting, is the same when you apply that to a TV screen or multiple LED screens. You know, where's a focal point? Where are, you know, the lines drawn? Where's the eye drawn? So that in terms of motion design is then something that one works with for whether that's creating titles or basic animation for images. And that's what I did with the Beatles in 8 days a week. It was really, really such an incredible project. I absolutely, obviously love the Beatles, grew up on them. So just having access to the archive footage and images was such a treat. And I put a team together and we were tasked with bringing the archive to life. So basically with when you're seeing a still image of them in the recording studio, we then added a little bit of, it's called 2.5D animation, where you're literally taking a still, but you're cutting it up into layers and you're adding the feeling of moving through it with a camera to that, so that you have things in the foreground are moving at a different tempo or a different scale to something in the background. And we added a bit of life into things like texture animation or smoke in the cigarettes. And it was really lovely to be actually that in some film review, some massive review, somebody picked up on that and just, you know, said, and obviously cigarette smoking, not endorsing it at all at this point, but just that because it was so present in all the images, that really brought something to life.
That's great.
Yeah, I loved working on that project.
Fantastic. Really so lovely. So interdisciplinary artist, and makes it, yeah, you have a good mix and having eggs in different baskets as well. So is that for you, let's say, an advice you would have for artists that want to be artists for life and earn a living? Or do you have other suggestions as well as how you could become an artist?
I think it's so dependent on where you are living and what is all around you and what kind of support is there for you. So I think it's quite hard for me to make a, you know, comment in some way on someone that is, say, living in Europe somewhere, because I guess the funding structures are quite different there. We are obviously living in a country that has many issues to solve before I think there is a lot of investment in the art. But I do believe that the arts generally are actually what is the most important for, I think, a society to be communicating with each other, to see each other, to, you know, really value each other in a way. I think our focus is so much on production versus reflection and contemplation and philosophy, you know, as a society as a whole. I'm not saying just South Africa. So I think I am also currently working with an artist, a dancer called Gregory Makoma, who is a massively supporter of really trying to push for young artists to be able to choose a career in dance or in art in general. And we're busy creating a short film based on that, which will also develop into a feature film. So on that, we have a lot of discussions about exactly that. So I think it's hard for me to, you know, say to anyone, you know, how to approach something, because I guess my process became quite organic, or is very organic. But I think, yes, being, you know, multidisciplinary really helps. I think if you believe in what it is that you really, really, really want to say inside, you know, I feel I'm driven again by the wish for connection. And I guess, you know, somebody else might go, oh, I really want to make, you know, bombastic, huge sculptures or something. And that is, you know, the drive. So then once you, I think, work with that, really that inner drive, which is, I mean, your purpose to a degree, if you wish to, you know, say it like that, or then I think you can figure out ways of how to make that real. I mean, I think here we can apply to various funds, but yeah, the structures are quite different. Whereas I think one could most probably have a career that is solely based on, you know, outputting bombastic sculptures, for example, somewhere else. And here, I think you might just have to work a little harder for that. But they're both, you know, vitally important to do.
You were mentioning being an artist and also having technical knowledge, technical skills. Can you mention a couple of skills that you would say are important in your job?
Okay, so if I'm starting at, obviously, motion design, it's the software and all that, then, which is, you know, there's variety out there, whether you then go into 3D or not. And things keep changing as well, which is what's amazing right now. I mean, with the advent of VR or, you know, AR technologies, there's just so much that one can learn. But I think it does all fit into itself. Then on the VJ side, you know, I work with VDMX, I work with MadMapper, which is, you need to have I guess, technical knowledge in the sense of, yes, how that software works, but also how it can be applied to any kind of screens or any kind of situations, like, you know, whether your system is plugged in directly to the screens or running via servers, and whether you're outputting via, you know, the external displays or over network and NDI. And there also now lights and things are changing all the time. So there's new technology that's coming up that's wanting to ensure that devices really speak to each other, in the sense that I can run my visuals through a Skeptron or through, you know, a magic panel or something, which is a specific light that then can also take video as a feed. So my technical knowledge needs to keep growing with the technology that I'm interfacing with all the time. And again, there, I mean, I think what is best always in whatever one does is, you know, ask questions, get involved, be passionate, ask people that you know that have time and aren't in the middle of something else, you know, just to go, okay, oh, what is this? I haven't seen this before. You know, what else can I do here? And again, at front of a house, like among all my technical crew or the technical crew I interface with, I think it's really great. We often have such a great connection and vibe, and it's not that whole, oh, here's just guys and let me see them as something else. And they're, you know, they're men and I'm a woman and we're all different. We really don't, you know, how do you say, enhance our differences, but rather really go, this is, we're all here together for the show. So let's figure out the best way to work for the show, but also for future shows. And how do we learn from each other? And how do we just actually make it a good energy, you know, have good energy around each other?
You're an independent, right? So it's definitely, are there any compromises that you need to make in order to be an independent artist?
I mean, I feel, again, I was quite lucky. I saw my parents just do lots of different jobs. They did, they had an art gallery, they were framing, they were teachers, they just did absolutely everything. So I think from that, I was lucky to see them, you know, be in charge of their own timeline and be independent in that sense. You know, they weren't working 9 to 5. And I guess like most independents, you actually work entirely all the time. But again, I think it's all coming from having, I think, choosing. You know, when I'm in a job with a client or something that is a very difficult one, I can go, okay, this is it's only, you know, for a limited time, and I can choose not to take this on again the next time the same situation comes around. So I really enjoy that part of it. But yes, I mean, you definitely sometimes, I'm more on the side of, you know, burning myself out or taking on too much, because it comes from making sure that you can, you know, I guess, service all the clients that one has. If they need something, although you're completely overloaded, you'll be like, don't worry, I'll make a plan for you, you know, because these are really good client relationships. So whereas I think when you're in, I guess, something that we still call a 9 to 5, which I'm sure is also not just finishing at 5, you are more, you know, assured of what is happening. But yes, you have to take on whatever the company that you're working for takes on. So I think it's a personality maybe, and I don't want to say either one is right or wrong. I just feel that this for me
works better for you.
Really well, and it works better. It's scary at times. I've definitely had many times where I wasn't sure, you know, where things were going. But I think, again, there's downtime to learn, and there's downtime to go, okay, fine, I'm going to focus on learning, you know, the next tool or the new thing, or think about where it is that I'm heading or that my industry is heading. I mean, I'm sure COVID is, you know, something that's ringing as an echo in many, many bones of every, you know, of anyone, because it did show that things can change in an instant.
For sure.
So,
and lastly, like a lesson you've learned from the past.
Something I've learned from the past. be flexible, have a great attitude no matter what. Yeah, I think what I've realized over the years is to make sure that when I'm feeling like there's something wrong, in whether that's an environment I'm in or in what I'm doing or which direction I'm going, or me trying to mold myself to people's personalities or, you know, whatever industry I'm in too much, you know, figure out how to make ways to, I don't know, this sounds wrong to express it in its simplest way, but it's almost figure out ways to keep yourself happy and positively aligned with moving forward. Because I think when we are in situations or environments that are, you know, hard or detrimental. I think some of those are, you know, straightforward, difficult. It's like, you know, working hard, not sleeping a lot is a very straightforward, you know, that's what it is. And that's how it is for many people in whatever job you're in.
Oh, for sure.
But I think when you're in a toxic environment, I think figure out how to move through that and not be too affected by it.
No, it's excellent. Yeah, it's excellent advice and lesson learned. Sometimes it's a $10 million question and challenge. Yeah. Not easy to figure it out, but yeah, for sure, keep an eye on that and fulfill your satisfaction and your happiness as much as you can with what you do.
Absolutely. And I think happiness, you know, sometimes not in the sense of just, you know, be happy, everything's like good, don't worry, but on a real deep, like knowing that, you know, life is, will keep throwing everything at you. That's what you get to learn, you know, and and, you know, figuring out just how to align with what is best for things around. And I mean, I guess people express it in like what is highest and best, you know, it's more, it's that, you know, because I think when you're within a very difficult, whether that's an environment or people, you know, that can be extremely stressful because you could, you know, feel manipulated, and that just really changes how you are within. And I think that's an important thing to hold on to, just some kind of, you know, sacred space inside you.
Thank you, Inka.
But this is getting into other sides of things.
Thanks a lot. You know, thank you very much for your insights and congratulations for your career. I hope it's been inspiring for the listeners. And I wish you all the best.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thank you so much. Thank you very much for the wishes. And may everyone find everything that they wish to be doing.
That was Inka Kensia, interdisciplinary artist and VJ. You will find more episodes on Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast, as well as any of your favorite players. I'm always looking for new guests, so please send me ideas to jobtalespodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, see you next week for a new episode of Job Tales.